You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Every election year, we make our own South Dakota political history. For today's Dakota Political Junkies conversation, we explore the history we have inherited. John Hunter is publisher emeritus of the Madison Daily Leader. He's a member of the South Dakota Newspaper Hall of Fame. He recently wrote commentary for the Leader about the political legacy of former Congressman Carl Mundt. Kevin Wooster is also a longtime South Dakota journalist. For example, he's reported for the Argus Leader, the Rapid City Journal, Kello, and SDPB. He recently wrote about the political legacy of Mount Rushmore National Memorial for South Dakota Searchlight. Wooster joined us from the SDPB Black Hill Surgical Hospital studio. Hunter stopped by the SDPB Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls.
And actually, the thought first triggered when I was thinking about presidential debates. Now, Mundt was a champion debater. In fact, he was national president of the National Forensic League for 38 years or something like that, even during his time in Congress, and kind of a renowned public speaker, much more the style of that day than today. But that's what really triggered that. And then I started looking at a few things and discovered that it's the 125th anniversary of his birth early next year. So started recalling it. And he has a big presence in Madison. You know, the Mundt Library is there, the Mundt Archives, the Mundt Foundation was there until it was absorbed into the Dakota State Foundation. So he's kind of considered a native son. If there was a sign on the interstate, this would say hometown of Carl Mundt. But I'm not sure many people remember him anymore.
And he served for an astonishingly long time. Tell us a little bit about his longevity in the U.S. Senate.
And not only in the U.S. Senate, but in the House as well.
A
lot of people forget he served 10 years in the House. But he really was remarkably young when he did things. He was right out of college, he went to Bryant, South Dakota, and taught. And after a year, he was named superintendent of the school district. So he's 23 years old or something like that. Then he taught at Dakota State, and then he ran for Congress, served for 36 years. It's, you know, certainly the longest by some distance. Tim Johnson is a second at 28 years, but that's a long time to serve in Congress. And he did it all the way up until a stroke wiped him out, and he retired.
So 1936 through 1972. He is in public service on behalf of the people of South Dakota.
And think of what happened during 1936.
You know, a few things.
Yeah. World War II, the civil rights unrest, Vietnam, all sorts of stuff. The Cold War was a big part of what he did, and growth. You know, the Aeros Data Center is here because of Mundt. The Interstate Highway, I-29, going up the east side of South Dakota, was intended to go up the west side of Minnesota. And Mundt insisted that it came to South Dakota.
Obviously, also serving that long, there are going to be things that he has to deal with that we look at with a different eye today, including his participation on the House Un-American Activities Committee, which is widely seen as a place where they were trying to root out disloyalty in America. This is a Cold War artifact. But you think that that is not necessarily a stain on his record. How come?
Well, the committee, right, and trying to think of the perspective of the time that it was in. We certainly were fearful of the creeping communism during that time. And then, of course, McCarthyism really took over, where you got this paranoia and really untruths about, you know, lots of U.S. government officials being communists. And I think with today's lens, I think we'd look at the Hollywood thing where you'd have all these accusations of communists and blackballing and so forth. By today's lens, we'd think that's terribly unfair. But I think there was a lot of fear in those days. Mundt's role on that Anti-American Activities Committee, at least through what his biography and people at the Mundt Foundation, which a lot of them worked for Mundt and so therefore are probably biased toward Mundt, really talked about him as a voice of reason within that thing. Let's try to find the truth here. Let's just not run with popular sound bites. So whether that's true or not, I don't know. Again, I've only heard that one side, but that he served with distinction on that committee.
How is he remembered in Madison today or in South Dakota today?
interestingly that, you know, his Senate papers congressional papers are all housed at Madison. Okay. And so researchers come there, and usually it has to do with, you know, certainly around the fall of communism, there was a great interest about Mundt and his time there, but other things as well. So we do get researchers come to Madison, look that up. A lot of it's gone online, so you can do that otherwise. So a few years ago, and I was president of the Mundt Foundation for a while, we promoted a tour, hired a couple of actors who would be Mundt and other people, and did a couple of hundred school districts in the state to try to keep his memory alive. As I recall, that was around his 100th birthday. Now it'd be his 125th. So we tried to keep that alive, but other than the Mundt Library, I can't think of anything. Maybe Kevin can think of things that were named for Mundt other than that. I think maybe some, he was big into conservation, so there may be some kind of wildlife refuges or something.
Hmm. Kevin Wooster, thoughts on Carl Mundt and his political legacy in South Dakota? What are some things that you think are worth asking questions about?
Well, I remember in about 1981, I was sitting in the Argus Leader newsroom, and Anson Yeager, who had been the editor and was the editorial page editor then, walked by, and I was writing something, and he went by, and I said, Anson, is this how you spell Mundt? And I was just double-checking myself, and he stopped, and he said, I never thought I'd hear that question asked in a newsroom. So, and remember, that's 40-some years ago. And so you can imagine how far removed people have gotten from Mundt. I certainly know how to spell McGovern and Knipe.
Dashel.
And, or Kniep, as some reporters spelled it back. And you know what really struck me about the kind of the short conversation we had by email about with John and when we talked about the stroke that the senator had in, what, November of 69 or somewhere in there?
Remarkably, that was right after, may have been the peak of his career, the dedication of the Mundt Library. President Richard Nixon made his first speech outside Washington by coming to Madison and speaking on behalf of his friend Carl Mundt. And then 5 months later has a debilitating stroke that wipes him out.
Yeah, and when we talked, and you brought a point up that I hadn't thought about in years, what would have happened? He was so impaired that he couldn't really function, and his wife was kind of overseeing the office for him, and the staff was doing, you know, working the job. People, including the staff, were just trying to get him to resign eventually and resign his office. And had he, instead of serving it out the rest of that term, who knows who would have been the next U.S. senator in that spot had the Republican Frank Farrar, the governor at the time, been able to fill it.
Well, how did he serve it out if he was incapacitated, John?
Well, not very well.
Yeah. Yeah, and Kevin and I talked a little bit about that, a kind of a smudge on his record, but really not of his own fault, right? It's not his fault he had a stroke. So
he was incapacitated.
Completely incapacitated. So they were even testing to see if he could say yes, nod yes. He couldn't speak at all, couldn't really move. And so they concluded that he could not even nod yes or no effectively. Mm-hmm. So the idea of resigning that office fell to his wife, Mary. And the staff, led by Bob McCoy, and there are other names that you'd know, Kevin, who were in that office, worked really hard to try to get him to resign that seat with honor. But the Senate had 99 seats for 3 years. So it was an awful situation. The other congressional leaders and so forth were very sympathetic at the beginning, but that wore away. And then it went to frustration and then eventually to anger. So by not resigning, it really was a steep downhill slide for Mundt. And, you know, if you remember at the time, Frank Farrar was the governor, 2-year terms at that time. So he was governor from 69 to 71, January of each year. So if Mundt had the stroke in 69, he could have resigned, and Farrar, a Republican, would have replaced him with another Republican. But he didn't. Dick Knipe came in 2 years later. But eventually he never did resign. Yeah. So
Knipe is a Democrat, for people who don't remember.
Right.
Yeah.
And then so Jim Abaresque, a Democrat, took that Senate seat.
Yeah.
Afterwards. So, yeah, it is a rough thing. But really, I think you have to say, at least from my view and others, it was Mary Mundt who caused that stain at the end of his career, and not, you know, Carl didn't cause his own stroke. So It was a sad ending. I remember the funeral in Madison. You know, he's buried in Madison. I think his legacy in Madison is still strong among those. You know, you'd have to be fairly old to have known him at this point. But I think his reputation is good.
John Hunter and Kevin Wooster and I recorded that conversation yesterday. Now, you heard John Hunter mention U.S. Senator Tim Johnson. You may have also heard by now that Senator Johnson died today. His former chief of staff, Dre Samuelson, said in a statement that Johnson died surrounded by his family and also surrounded by love and admiration. Tim Johnson served in the U.S. House of Representatives from 1987 to 1997. Then South Dakotans sent him to the U.S. Senate. He never lost an election, but after a brain hemorrhage in 2006, followed by an inspiring recovery, he decided not to seek re-election in 2014. I reached Stephanie Herseth Sandlin via phone this morning. She is currently the president of Augustana University in Sioux Falls. She was elected to the U.S. House of Representatives in 2004, where she went on to serve 4 terms. She was the first woman elected to the U.S. House from South Dakota and the youngest woman serving in Congress during that time.
Yes, this is a sad day. You know, so many of us loved Senator Johnson and Tim. Well, I just greatly admired and respected his service to South Dakota and our country, and it was an honor to serve with him and an even greater honor to call him my friend.
Yeah. When he talked about South Dakota, whether it was about South Dakota politics or what the people needed or just about the state, what's one thing that you remember came up again and again? What was one of his themes of this place and these people?
A rich heritage, diverse perspectives, people that stayed grounded, practical, wanted the best out of their government and their representatives. And he represented that, right? He was the consummate statesman and listened well to all of his constituents. He loved South Dakota. We both made our home in the state in Sioux Falls after we left public service. And it was his dedication to everyone he connected with, whether in agriculture for our farmers and ranchers, whether it's deep commitment to our state and country's veterans, the trusting relationships he developed with tribal communities and leaders, business leaders across the state. He was South Dakota. You know, he clearly put state and country first.
Yeah. Were there ways that you learned about him, about leadership, either something he told you or something that you picked up by watching him that you still apply today?
Yes. Tim was a humble servant leader. His humility, from the time I knew him as a young girl, when he and my dad were serving in the legislature together, to interning with him in Washington, D.C. when I was in college, to then running for office alongside him in 2002 and then serving with him. He just remained so grounded in the values of South Dakota, reflected those in the very best way in his service, both in Pierre and in Washington. And he was a role model for me. And I felt I could always talk to him about anything, the things that we were working on together in public policy, or sometimes the things that were really hard on the campaign trail. But we also celebrated great joys together. I remember when his first grandson was born. I remember how great he was to me when I was first serving South Dakota in the, after the special election. He just was, I felt he was always in my corner, and he was someone I could always talk to and trust.
And here is Senator Tim Johnson's longtime chief of staff speaking with SDPB's Lee Strubinger.
It's hard to imagine someone living a life more meaningful and impactful than Tim's. And in the end, impact and meaning are really the best that any of us can hope to achieve. Tim succeeded in reaching the goals of meaning and impact way beyond what I'm sure were his wildest dreams when he was a young man. But that success obviously doesn't make saying goodbye to him any easier, I know. And there's nothing that anyone can say that will help that, much as I wish otherwise. Somewhat ironically, considering the name, in the second book of Timothy, it says, I have fought the good fight, I have finished the race, I have kept the faith. Those words fit Tim Johnson perfectly. He fought the good fight, he finished the race, and he did keep the faith. Those of us who mourn his loss today also celebrate his life and the lives of all those whom he touched and will continue to touch in the future through his good works.
How did he accomplish that as a politician?
Well, he was smart, obviously. He worked very hard, and he was truly one of the most determined people that I've ever known, if not the most determined. It was a combination of those things. He had a great work ethic. He was really smart, and he would work like a dog to achieve a goal. When he was in high school, he had the record for the most touchdowns in Vermilion High School for decades. It wasn't because, in my opinion, that he was such a great athlete. He was obviously a good athlete, but I think it was mostly because he was just so determined he refused to get tackled. And I think that showed up in his later life. In fact, I know that it did.
What was it like working with him? And can you remind me a little bit about your time with him in D.C.?
Well, I stayed with him. I was the only chief of staff he had in his entire congressional career, and that was 28 years. So obviously I found it easy to work with him. He was a wonderful human being. He was kind. I mean, he could be demanding as he needed to be, but he treated people with great respect, even if he didn't agree with them.
We'll bring you more on the legacy of U.S. Senator Tim Johnson as people gather to remember. Find the latest online at sdpb.org.